This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our next guest is a retired FBI undercover agent who, in his three decades with the Bureau, maintained 12 different identities, often juggling three at a time, busting everyone from white-collar criminals to drug cartels, and, quote, hung out with main guys who kill undercover agents. And he tells his story in his new book, The Pretender, My Life Undercover for the FBI. Please welcome, Mark Ruskin.
Hey Mark, welcome back.
Hey Johnny, thanks for inviting me back. I much appreciate it.
I'm so fascinated by real life. We're so conditioned to you know, the Jason Bournes of the world, these incredible movies about espionage and spying and undercover work, that I think we tend to get so desensitized to it that we forget there's real life guys out there really taking those risks and really performing at that level.
Well, it's thanks to real life guys and the people I worked with, my colleagues, my comrades in the Bureau and in other agencies, that everyone else can sleep well at night because other people are out there taking the risks and making this place safer for everybody else.
You 27 years of service, and we started to get into this conversation before that, you know, guys like, because we interviewed Joe Pistone, the real life Donnie Brasco, but he had one that to remember, and it destroyed his world. It really did. It consumed him. How many different identities over the years did you portray?
But first, just with regard to Joe Pistone, I had the opportunity to work with him a little bit a long time ago, and if you notice, he's one of the people who has written an editorial comment, a blurb about the book.
Mm-hmm.
So he's read my book, and I'm very proud of the fact that he endorsed it and gave it a thumbs up, because for all of us other undercover agents, he is like the icon, the one we look up to as the master of undercover operations. When I started doing UC work, there was no such thing as a UC certification program. It was all on-the-job training back in the day. And one of the texts I used to learn to do undercover work was reading Donnie Brasco. I read it as a textbook, and I learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
So much appreciate what I learned from him. But I started off as Henri Marc Renard when I worked on the Commodities Exchange here in New York on Wall Street, my first big UC op. And then a year later, a year and a half later, I rolled over into Run DMV, which was a pun on Run DMC, the rap group, as Alex Perez, and then started working as Sal Morelli concurrently as Alex Perez.
Let me go back to your second. With Run, you said Run DMC. Now, Daryl Mack, D, is a friend of ours.
No kidding.
Yeah, D's been a friend for years now. I mean, a close friend. And so what did you have to do with DMC?
No. The name of the case is Run DMV.
Oh, Run DMV. Okay, that's what I was like. I was like, what? And we'll continue on now. But I thought, holy hell, man, were they in some kind of trouble at one point?
No. It was a pun.
The case agent, Dave Clark, came up
with that.
But my question earlier was, how many different personalities and did you have to adopt? How many identities did you become?
I would sometimes juggle three or four simultaneously. I mean, at one point in my desk, I'd have like three or four wallets, and I would take out the appropriate wallet for the appropriate meeting. I mean, over the course of 27 years, I would change case, I would change ID. One ID would get burnt. If I worked a case as Alex Perez, let's say, for a certain number of years, a bunch of people get arrested, that name is no longer, it's toast if I use it again. So now I become Daniel Martinez, or I become Alejandro Marconi, or Alejandro Kulikov.
And one of the things you would always do is when you would go ahead and bring the guy down, you would get arrested as well in the middle of the moment, but not until the handcuffs were on the perp.
There were a certain number of rules that I would set up when we had the pre-arrest briefing, there'd be a meeting between myself and the arrest teams, and we would lay down the, plan how it was going to be done. And I always would tell them in advance, when you arrest me, because to make it look real, and sometimes it was necessary for operational purposes for the subjects to think I was one of the bad guys still, I always tell them, don't cuff me until everybody of the real bad guys is cuffed, because I didn't want a situation where all of a sudden the shooting breaks out and I'm running around like a chicken.
With your hands pinned behind your back, yeah.
Yeah, ducking around with my hands cuffed behind my back. So they would throw me on the hood of the car. They'd shout and yell all kinds of obscenities at me, and they'd be fumbling with the cuffs. But the reality was that the cuffs didn't go on me until everybody else was cuffed and safely secured.
Mark, tell me this. When you did all these different identities and all through the course of this 27 years, did you ever run across criminals in different scenarios from case to case, like where you go, oh, God, that guy's going to recognize me. That guy's going to know that I'm not who I say I am. Did you ever run across people that you because that would be the big fear, right? It was big as we think this planet is. The criminal world's not nearly big enough to hide all the time.
I was in Yonkers, DMV, Hank walked in the lobby talking to three or four subjects in the Run DMV case, which was a case involved the production of fraudulent documents. It was driver's licenses, social security cards, green cards, which were the genuine article, but issued in fictitious names. And these were being carried by mobsters and terrorists and fugitives. And I had infiltrated the group of people, the middlemen who would obtain these documents. And I was talking to a few of them in the lobby there when in walks a subject from ComCorp, which was the white-collar case I'd worked a couple of years prior. So I saw him walk in the door, and he didn't see me. I almost like had a panic attack when I saw him walk in, because that could have been that could have made for kind of a melancholy afternoon if he had seen me and recognized me.
Yeah, it could be kind of a bad day, huh?
I tried to head out the back. The back door had an alarm on it. If I pushed it open, it would have gone off.
Right.
So I had to exit. I'd have to go back out the front and right by this guy, who knew me as H. Mark Renard, and the people I was dealing with knew me as Alex Perez. So at a moment when he had his back to me, I go up to the subjects from the current case, and they look at me and go, Alex, what's wrong? You look terrible, which I did. I guess it showed. I said, I don't know. I'm not feeling quite well. I think I better get out of here, go to the hospital. And I just ran out, and the guy didn't see me, thank God. Then that evening, I called my cousin, who's a cardiologist. Said, what disease could I have had that I'd be fine the next day when I was clutching my stomach? And she tells me, just tell them that you passed a kidney stone. You were at the emergency room till 3 in the morning, passed a kidney stone, now you're fine.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. The next day, I came in. Hey, Alex, what happened to you yesterday? Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, God damn, it hurt. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so fast forward to this story I was reading with Oakley. A guy has a job where he's got access to these radioactive rods, this energy, and he puts it out there. He wants to sell them for a couple $100,000, which is straight treason. And
right.
But he doesn't. But it's here's the weird twist. But he doesn't want to sell it to a Middle Eastern country. He'll only So what is he? He's a treasonous bastard with a conscience. How does that work out?
Well, late in my career, I would say 7-8 years, I started working with what are called false flag operations. And these were really fascinating cases. These are cases where I would be pretending to be an intelligence officer from some other country. And it could be any of a number of countries. And the way a false flag is called a false flag because I'm pretending to have a false flag. I'm pretending to be
from
some other country. And I'm dealing with a trader, someone who wants to sell classified, top secret information to a foreign power. In this case, it was, nuclear type of materials, and the guy was, I guess, kind of like a right wing, not to disparage any extreme, but extremes on both sides have a problem. So this white guy may have been a little bit on the right wing fringe. So he didn't want to be dealing with terrorists, but he didn't mind selling out his country.
Yeah, which is crazy. But he wants a couple hundred grand for these fuel rods. And you had to become Jean-Marc. Was that your identity then?
Yeah, it was very touchy. In these cases, the first time I contacted, usually these people have been looking for someone, they've been hunting for someone to sell this stuff to. In this case, he had reached out to an informant whom he believed had contacts with foreign governments, and the informant that he dealt with, he thought was a friend, a contractor, actually was working, had friends in the FBI, and he tipped us off. So Oakley was trying to sell this to the French, so I pretended to be a French intelligence officer, a spy master, if you will. And when I first contacted him by phone, he bought off on it. And it was a major operation because we didn't know what he was trying to sell. We didn't know if it was radioactive, if it was dangerous, if it could cause risk to the local population.
Yeah, these are fuel rods. So when you go in for the final buy, I'm going to fast forward just a little bit. When you guys make all your arrangements, you decide on the money, how it's all going to go together. You've got everything. Like in your bag, it looks like a hairdryer, but it's really a Geiger counter. You've got things. You've got stuff that read radiation. How much is going to be emitted from this? You've also got the guy to have it in a plastic bag you can see through so you know what you're looking at. And you realize, and this guy, other guy's armed. He had a .380 in his pocket the whole time.
Right.
So
the main one of the main issues I had with this case, we flew down to Oak Ridge, and it was a lot of preparation. It all went down in a week, but it was a week that you could write a whole novel about what happened in that week. There were SWAT teams, surveillance teams, there were UC preparation teams. There were all kinds of engineers, people from justice, from headquarters. I mean, there were a lot of eyes looking at me. And one of the concerns I had was, I'd bought heroin in the past, I'd bought stolen cars, I bought all kinds of contraband, but I'd never bought contraband which I was worried could give me leukemia
right.
10 years later.
Right.
So they really had to convince me that I wasn't going to be in touch with something which would contaminate me. And one of the steps, the final deal, when I bought the stuff from him, it was on the rooftop of a garage out by the airport there, so it was an open area. The bureau on the lower floor had a truck with equipment on it to sense it so that when he drove by, they would see if there were any gamma rays emanating from his car. And in the truck was a SWAT team wearing hazmat uniform costumes, so that if he drove by and was radioactive, he would never have made it to the top, to the roof
right.
where I was waiting. He would have been intercepted and taken down by the SWAT team.
And you guys, this is an important one because I feel your pain on this. You've done all this work. You've got this guy. He's ready to make the sell. You're ready to make the buy. You've got the money. You've got the cash. You've got everything in place. And then some dick at the department decides he's got to have one more thing, which is they want the guy on tape saying, selling it to, he wanted to something with the Arabs, or he wanted to sell it to Sudan. And if, for no other reason than just the guy wanted his fingerprint in it somehow. He had one, and it's the kind of thing that you can absolutely destroy an entire case with.
Exactly. And it was a lawyer from the Justice Department. And what he wanted was that when the deal was concluded, and I had purchased the tubes, the nuclear tubes from the guy, and given him his $200,000, I was supposed to tell, he wanted me to, this lawyer wanted me to say that the stuff was going to be sent to Sudan so that they could use it. And the purpose, it was idiotic. We already had a Loctite bulletproof case against Oakley.
Right.
So all that this would have done was muddy up the waters, but he wanted to be able to add another charge. Like, I guess it's in Sudan is on the list of terrorist nations or something, that if the guy knew it was being going there, they could add an extra charge. But all it would have done, I think, is divert from the strong case we already had, and then defense lawyers would have been able to argue
leading
that we were trying to trap the guy.
Yeah.
It was an idiotic idea. And fortunately, I was very adamant about not saying that, and the special agent in charge and the other FBI management people fought on my behalf to get that taken out of the script.
Well,
who knows how the guy would have reacted? We knew he didn't want to sell to the Middle East, and we knew he maybe was carrying a gun. It turned out he was carrying a gun, so it could have made the situation, made him go ballistic.
It's got to be fun. You're the guy in the field waiting, trying not to get shot, trying not to turn radioactive, and then some lawyer Yahoo empty a hole in a suit wants to tell you what to do. That's the point where it'd be hard to not lose your skull.
Yeah, well, having patience sometimes, you know, when you have people who don't do undercover work and don't have good street sense, trying to tell the undercover how you should be behaving or what you should be asking. I'd have situations in other cases where an assistant U.S. attorney would say to me, okay, Mark, next time you meet with the subject, ask him where he got the heroin or ask him where he gets the gun.
Yeah. Why just ask him to shoot you in the face?
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. It's like, that's not how criminals act. You know, yeah. If I'm buying heroin or some contraband, all I care about is the price.
Right.
You know, the quality good, if the price is right, fine. And I have to act like I couldn't care less what he gets.
Well, of course.
You know, I mean, I don't want to know where you got it. I don't know where you live. I don't want anything about you. I just want to make money.
Listen, Mark, they're giving me the rap because I know we're getting over the time, but man, the book is so good, The Pretender. Hopefully you'll go on a book tour. You'll come through Kansas City, and we'll get to spend some more time together.
Hey, I'd love that. That'd be great.
It's really good, Mark. It's a great book.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.